Imam Al-Amin, welcome to A Closer Look. Good to have you.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm so glad to be with you.
When you first heard of the attack at Charlie Hebdo and the offices there and the subsequent events in Paris, did you have a feeling almost of deja vu because this is not the first time something like this has happened? And immediately people start saying, okay, where are the leaders of the Islamic community here? Was that the first thought that went through your head, though?
Well, yeah, the first thought when any of these types of atrocities occur and that people doing them claim to be Muslim or identify it with as if it's an Islamic act, it really does sadden my heart. And it's because Islam has nothing to do with that. But at the same time, people want Muslim leaders and Muslim personalities to come out and speak about it. And it's in speaking about it, it's a horrendous act. And there's no way I can identify with it as a person or as a Muslim. And then to always be asked to speak about it at the same time lets me know that the general public is somewhat in the dark about what the faith and what the religion is really about.
That's where I was going, because the folks who do this kind of thing often cite the Quran or often cite something, and that may be one reason why they ask people who are leaders in the community here to speak, because they're saying, okay, so what does the faith really say?
Right. Well, first of all, people have to understand that the only justification from an Islamic standpoint of murder is another murder, and only if you are positive and it's proven, it's clear. But there's no justification for killing anyone or murdering anyone just because of what you think is blasphemy or what you think is some type of criminal act, per se. So there's no way of justifying that. But I think one of the problems, Dennis, is that we have engaged in all of these activities as a war, and so we really have convinced some of these people that they are soldiers of a particular cause or whatever, when really they are just criminals, and oftentimes very ignorant of what their faith is, and really ignorant of what the potential of human life should be about, or what we should be striving for. So I think we have created the space for folks to go to these extremes. And I really believe that if we dealt with all of them as criminals, it would put them in the right context.
In Christianity, there has been the debate for centuries over the just war.
Mm.
Catholicism particularly has engaged in that debate internally. Is there anything similar happening in Islam about, okay, when is violent action justified?
Well, it's clear. In the Quran, it says you have the right for an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But the next verse says, but it's best to forgive. Okay. And it says that that God has allowed one people to check another people, and if really to check anyone who's gone to an extreme or who's oppressing. And if that wasn't allowed, the Quran actually says there would not be left mosques, churches, synagogues, or monasteries where the name of God is commemorated in abundant measure. So really, from a Quranic standpoint, Muslims are obligated to protect not only freedom of religion and freedom of speech, but protect mosques, synagogues, churches, and monasteries. And so we're actually seeing people going in the opposite direction of that, which is really clearly against, for a Muslim to go against that is clearly un-Islamic.
So where does the justification come from? Does it come from anything that may have been said one way, either by the Prophet or in the Quran, and then is taken another way?
Let me give a little something else on the previous question, and then I can go to that. The Quranic message is during the Prophet's life, for the first he received revelation for 23 years. The first 13 years, he basically was a pacifist. And then after he moved out of Mecca into Medina and the Meccans came to attack him, he was given the revelation, fight with those who fight with you. But behind that revelation is the descriptions of how to fight. And that if you only fight until the people stop fighting, When they stop fighting, you can't continue to attack them. You cannot hurt children. You cannot hurt old people, elderly people. You can't destroy cattle or crops. So all these rules are there in terms of how to fight. And that if someone surrenders, you must stop. Now, the main idea, though, is that there's no compulsion in religion. So you can't make anybody convert to a religion or join your religion with force. The religion is between the person and God. In this particular case, where it's really strange where these young men get these ideas, in Islam, we don't picture God. We make no images of God. We make no images of the prophets, but it's a different reason for the prophets. Mainly, we don't make any images, physical images of the prophets, so that people will concentrate on their message, their word, and their life, and not their ethnicity or their race. So we don't think that because I'm Arab, I'm better than a Chinese Muslim or African-American Muslim. We don't put emphasis on Prophet Muhammad's appearance. But we do put emphasis on Prophet Muhammad's character, as well as the character of Jesus and Moses and all the other prophets. The irony of it is that we live in a world where other faiths and many people, not only do they image prophets, which if you're in this syndrome that you can't make an image of Prophet Muhammad, then you also, as a Muslim, should be problematic for you if you see an image of Jesus or an image of Moses. And even more so, though, if an image of God is made, that's really the whole start of the religion is Prophet Muhammad saying we can't worship all these idols. Okay. So it's really no Islamic justification for them. But the bottom line is that even if they're upset about the caricatures and all of this, you can't go and murder people just because they drew something that you don't agree with. You can't go and murder people just because they are doing something that you call blasphemous. The Quran doesn't say blasphemy is the punishment for it is death or anything. And so they have gotten caught up into this very, very narrow and strange concept that they actually end up being more blasphemous of the prophet than the people who drew the cartoons.
On that line, though, part of the reason it appeared that Charlie Hebdo was targeted was because of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. And many people even outside the faith know that images of God and the Prophet and other key figures in Islam, those just don't appear. So the question then is, what is it about a caricature of the Prophet that makes so many people so angry?
Well, first of all, we don't make images of Prophet Muhammad, you know, as Muslims, but we do understand that other people don't quite get that, don't quite understand that. But you don't have to be an educated Muslim, just have to be a thinking Muslim to understand that if someone draws a caricature of the Prophet, that's not Prophet Muhammad. That's not him. And so we always put the emphasis on what his character was. How did he behave? How did he act? And clearly, what these three young men did has nothing to do with Prophet Muhammad's character, and therefore they have deformed and discredited and abused his image more so than these caricatures.
It's interesting you should say that, because that is almost word for word what the AJC cartoonist Mike Lukovich said to me when I asked him about this. He said he does not and would not portray the Prophet in a cartoon, because he said the Prophet had nothing to do with what happened. And then he said just what you did,
right,
which is these young men did more damage to the Prophet's image than any cartoon could.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. And, you know, we have a lot of that going on in the Islamic world, but it's for various other reasons, and it's a shame, but we find that many Muslims throughout the Islamic world do think that the war on terrorism translates into a war on Muslims or a war on Islam. And it's really because, from a media standpoint, when you read terrorism, it's not far down the the line that you're going to see Muslim or Islam or Islamists. We don't even have the word in Arabic. We don't have a word for Islamists. But so now that word has been associated with a terrorist. And so there are those who really think that there is a war on Islam or Muslims. And when we have so many drone attacks and those kinds of things, or the reports of those attacks, then they feel that that's their justification.
Can you see, though, why someone would describe someone as Islamist terrorist simply by as identifying them as someone who believes that he or she is fighting for the faith, even if they're not trying to say, oh, because they're a Muslim, they're a terrorist. They're saying this person believes they are fighting for the faith, and the faith is their motivation.
Yeah, but if you were to go to any of these countries, including Yemen, Pakistan, Syria, any of these countries, Iraq, and you'd ask the policeman, why is he a policeman? Because this is part of his faith. This is what he. Why, if you're a military man, why are you a soldier? Because this is part of my faith. I'm obligated to protect my country. I'm obligated to protect the innocent and protect the weak. I'm a Muslim, and so this is why I do this. So the majority of people that they are fighting against would also claim that they are fighting on behalf. They're defending their faith and their way of life.
What's been the impact? Not just on you. But on the community as a whole here in Atlanta, because we went through this after 9/11. Is it as bad as it was then? It seems that this incident has made people really heartsick in a way that many of the others haven't, as awful as they were.
This one is quite strange because the majority of the people would have actually condemned the magazine before this incident. And now there's all of this support. And really, basically, Muslims can't actually support the magazine, but at the same time, we would never encourage anyone to murder the editor. You know, the Quran says, argue with them in ways that are best. And so we should have, if you wanted to really argue with those with that magazine, you create your own magazine and have something. But still, you have rules that you have to abide by that maybe Charlie doesn't have to abide by. It really puts us in a difficult situation because I can't say I'm too Charlie. You know,
I can never say je suis Charlie.
No. Even though my French is a little rusty, but even if it was top notch, I couldn't say that. You know, but I am the police officer, and we don't get it too much. But one of those police officers was Muslim, okay. And I am the young Muslim brother in the kosher market that hid the patrons away in the cooler and saved their lives. I am all of these people that are trying to promote justice and decency, that have been slayed and put in these difficult situations, but I just can't say, yeah, I am Charlie.
Does it bother you when you hear the questions about, okay, we need to hear from this or that Muslim leader in this country as if one person could speak for the entire community, and yet, on the other hand, do you also see it as an opportunity?
Well, it's not an opportunity that I ever look forward to. And really, in the Muslim world, there's no one person that can speak for the whole Muslim world. And people have to understand that we are quite different from, say, the Catholic Church. We don't have a pope. Country by country may have a top religious figure, but for the Muslim world, there is no such one figure. And so I understand people wanting to hear a rational perspective or the moderate perspective. All you have to do now is go up on the internet and just Google any of the Muslim papers and periodicals and organizations here in the U.S. and in other places, and you see they all come out against these atrocities. And the moderate Muslims per se, and I don't even call them moderate Muslims, I just call them the average Muslim or the sane Muslim or the rational Muslim, they're always speaking against these horrendous events. And it's really just those who have given themselves to hurt and to hate and to extremes that most of our media thinks are newsworthy. It's sort of like all the planes that are flying every day, but the only one we really are going to cover are the ones that crash. And so we are covering these crashing Muslims day in and day out. And because of the war on terror, the war of Iraq and Afghanistan, and what's going on in Pakistan and what's going on in Yemen, and there are plenty of crashes to cover. But that is not the 95% of the Muslim body. That's not our attitude and our disposition. And we really, really are saddened by anyone who thinks that their religion gives them the right to murder people.
I want to come back to something you said a minute ago, which is, the response to a Charlie Hebdo might be, okay, start your own magazine or something like that. Which brings up the question, is there a place in Islam for satire about the faith? For instance, many comedians who satirize Christianity or Judaism grew up as Catholics, let's say, or grew up as a fundamentalist, or grew up in Judaism. Is there a place, does Islam allow for satire along the lines of a Charlie or along the lines of anything else like that?
Yeah, we actually have quite a few Muslim comedians now that are out there, but their approach is not so much, they satirize the way we understand and the way we practice the religion. You know, you can read a verse from Quran and you can go out in left field with it. So they will get onto that. Or one that says that some of us as Muslims, we have such a high regard for the Quran that we keep it up on our top shelf. And they say, well, hey, you never read it. You had it up there by the ceiling. You need a ladder. So yeah, we do have Muslim comedians that are doing that. And we also have academics that are doing it as well. They're looking at how we have come to practice the religion in some ways that are comical sometimes, but also somewhat depressing.
This is a little bit of a history question in a way. You're an Atlanta native.
Yes.
You came to the faith through the Nation of Islam originally in
the
70s, right?
Yes, right.
And now in Europe, we're hearing a lot of the young Muslims are coming in from other places, and so they are isolated sometimes by the people who were born in whatever country it happens to be. Mm-hmm. Ironically, after all of the back and forth in the 60s about the Nation of Islam, is the fact that there was already an American Islamic community when some of the big immigration waves hit, did that in a way make it easier for people in the U.S. to accept the fact that there is another faith, another community here?
That's a good question. I would say yes, and especially with the transformation of the Nation of Islam after the 42 years of Elijah Muhammad's leadership to give dignity to the African-American man, and then his son, Wallace Muhammad, or Warthuddin Muhammad, transforms it into a legitimate Islamic community with the concerns for interfaith and relationships with neighbors and everything. I think you're exactly correct that made it much easier for people to come and be to practice their religion as Muslims. We brought the religion out into the open here in America, and it paved the way. But now in places like France and Italy and even England, the other part is the whole colonial history of being colonizing these places in North Africa and West Africa, and now those who were colonized are coming to live in that country. And that's the other dynamic that sort of escapes us sometimes, but that's why there are these Islamic ghettos in France, is because France colonized those particular countries in North Africa. And none of these colonial rules ended like they didn't end with a Nelson Mandela. You know, they didn't end like South Africa did. So a lot of these hurts and grudges and histories are still being held.
You mentioned media portrayal a while ago. Is it really a process, though, as opposed to a single isolated set of stories? Because in the aftermath of an attack, there's obviously emotion. There's obviously, let's find who did this. Oh, they were members of this, thus, and so. But isn't it also a process that as it goes along, as we have a chance to have conversations like this, that there's more perspective?
Yeah, well, definitely is a process. And we have to keep in mind that other people, other Muslim people, have these same stories in their town, in their home. So Pakistan, you if you pull up their media, often you get that they had a drone attack, and it was at a wedding party, or was at a family gathering. 12 people killed, 20 people killed. So we only see it from our standpoint of what we can identify with, but we have these atrocities happening in other parts of the world when, and their dilemma is they can't identify any individual, and so they began to identify us as a country. They began to identify where the drone came from, or even the military. You know, we've had some military slaughters, and we're living in a very, very difficult time. But as you are saying, as we press through it, as we process through it, we can find some benefits, and the benefits ought to outweigh these hurts and these sorrows that we're going through. Quran says, verily, with every difficulty there is relief, and it repeats it again. So keep striving, keep pushing for the better. Encourage everybody towards what's best. It says, compete towards all that is good, and wherever you are, God will bring you together.
Imam Pleiman T. Al-Amin, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.